And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it's interesting to note that Facebook's fact checkers are in fact, except for one, a journalist and not scientist. And yet, the doctor from England was questioning the research that Pfizer did before it released its COVID drug. Has been taken to task by these journalists because he said the science doesn't support what's been done. But these journalists know better than somebody who's trained in the field what the science should say. Well, today's November the 12th, 316th day of the year. 49 days remain till the year's over with. 954, the 13-year-old Lothar III is crowned at the Abbey of St. Remy as the king of the West Frankish Kingdom. 13 years old. Got a full-time job. 1028, the future Byzantine Empress Zoe takes the throne as Empress Consort of Romanos III, Argyros. 1330, Battle of Posada ends. Wallachian Voivode Basarab I defeats the Hungarian army by ambush. 1439, Plymouth becomes the first town incorporated by the English Parliament. 1892, Pudge Heffelfinger becomes the first professional American football player on record, participating in his first paid game for the Allegheny Athletic Association. Pudge. 1893, Abdur Rahman Khan accepts the Durand Line as the border between Afghanistan and the British Raj. 1905, Norway holds a referendum resulting in a popular approval of the Storting's decision to authorize the government to make the offer of the throne of the newly independent country. 1912, King George I of Greece makes a triumphal entry into Thessalonica after its liberation from 482 years of Ottoman rule. 1912, the frozen bodies of Robert Scott and his men are found on the Ross Ice Shelf in Antarctica. 1918, Austria becomes a republic after the proclamation. A coup attempt by the Communist Red Guard is defeated by the Social Democratic Volkswehr. 1920, Italy and the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes signed the Treaty of Rapallo. 1927, Leon Trotsky is expelled from the Soviet Communist Party, leaving Stalin in undisputed control of the Soviet Union. He went to Mexico, became a journalist, eventually was assassinated, I think. 1928, SS Vestris sinks approximately 200 miles off Hampton Roads, Virginia. At least 110 passengers die, mostly women and children who die after the vessel's abandoned. 1933, Nazi Germany uses a referendum to ratify its withdrawal from the League of Nations. 1936, in California, San Francisco, Oakland Bay Bridge opens up to traffic. 1940, World War II, the Battle of Gabon ends as Free French forces take Libreville, Gabon, and all the French Equatorial Africa from the Vichy French forces. The Vichy French were pro-Nazis. 1940, World War II. Soviet Foreign Minister Vladislav Molotov arrives in Berlin to discuss the possibility of the Soviet Union joining the Axis. That would have made the world quite different. 1941, World War II. Temperatures around Moscow dropped to minus 12 degrees Celsius. That's 10 Fahrenheit. The Soviet Union launches ski troops for the first time against the freezing German forces around the city of Moscow. 1941, World War II, the Soviet cruiser Shervona Rukhrena is destroyed during the Battle of Sevastopol. 1942, World War II, the naval battle of Guadalcanal between Japanese and American forces begins near Guadalcanal. The battle lasts for 3 days and ends with an American victory. 1944, World War II. World Air Force launches 29 Avro Lancaster bombers, which sinks the German battleship Tirpitz, with 12,000-pound tall boy bombs off Tromsø in Norway. In 1948, in Tokyo, International Military Tribunal for the Far East sentences seven Japanese military and government officials, including General Hideki Tojo, to death for their roles in World War II. 1954, Ellis Island ceases operations. 1956, Morocco, Sudan, and Tunisia join the United Nations. 1956, in the midst of the Suez Crisis, Palestinian refugees are shot dead in Rafah by Israeli soldiers following the invasion of the Gaza Strip. 1958, a team of rock climbers led by Warren Harding completes the first ascent of the Nose on El Capitan in Yosemite Valley. 1961, Terry Joe Duperrault is the sole survivor of a series of brutal murders aboard the Ketch Bluebell. 1969, Vietnam War. Independent investigation of investigative journalist Seymour Hersh breaks the story of the My Lai Massacre. And it's interesting, the unit that I joined in South America, every senior officer had been involved in the My Lai Massacre. They got promoted. 1970, the Oregon Highway Division attempts to destroy a rotting beached sperm whale with explosives. Leads to the now infamous exploding whale incident. Now, for those not familiar with that, there have been a number of cases of exploding whale carcasses due to a buildup of gas in a decomposition process. And actual explosives have also been used to assist in disposing of whale carcasses, ordinarily after towing the carcass out to sea. Now, a widely reported case of an exploding whale occurred in Florence, Oregon in November 1970. When the Oregon Highway Division, now the Oregon Department of Transportation, blew up a decaying sperm whale with dynamite in an attempt to dispose of its carcass. The explosive threw whale flesh around 800 feet away. American humorist Dave Barry wrote about it in his newspaper column in 1990 after viewing television footage of the explosion. It was also parried in the 2007 movie Reno 911 Miami and the 2018 Australian comedy Swinging Safari. The weight of the carcass that they attempted to dispose of was right at 8 tons. Well, only some of the whale was disintegrated. Most of it remained on the beach for the Highway Department workers to get it rid of. Scavenger birds had been hoped would eat the remains of the carcass after the explosion in the piers as they were scared away by the noise. The explosive expert who set the dynamite had a brand new automobile purchased during a get a whale of a deal promotion in a nearby city. His car was flattened by a chunk of falling blubber. And in ending the story, it might be concluded that should a whale ever be washed ashore in Lane County again, those in charge will not only remember what to do, they'll remember what not to do. When 41 sperm whales beached nearby in 1979, state park officials burned and buried them. Later that day, a quote given to the Eugene Register Guard. It went just exactly right, except the blast funneled a hole in the sand under the whale, and some of the whale chunks are subsequently blown back onto the lookers in their cars. Well, it's interesting to note that something like that is almost impossible to get rid of. Also in 1970, the 1970 Bonnell Cyclone makes landfall on the coast of East Pakistan, becomes the deadliest tropical cyclone in history. Vietnam War is part of the Vietnamization. President Nixon sets February 1st, 1972 as the deadline for the removal of another 45,000 American troops from Vietnam. 1975, the Comoros join the United Nations. 1977, France conducts the arresting nuclear test as the 14th in the group of 29. The test series by the French went on from 75 to 78. 1979, Iran hostage crisis. In response to the hostage situation in Tehran, President Carter orders a halt to all petroleum imports to the U.S. from Iran. 1980, NASA Space Probe Voyager 1 makes its closest approach to Saturn and takes the first images of its rings. 1981, Space Shuttle Program, Mission STS-2, utilizing the Space Shuttle Columbia, marks the first time a crewed spacecraft is launched into space twice. Well, 1982, USSR, Yuri Andropov becomes a Secretary General of the Communist Party Central Committee. He succeeds Leonid Brezhnev, 1990. Crown Prince Akihito, formerly installed as Emperor Akihito of Japan. He becomes the 125th Japanese monarch, 1990. Tim Berners-Lee publishes a formal proposal for the World Wide Web. Also in 1991, Santa Cruz massacre. Indonesian forces open fire on a crowd of student protesters in Dili in East Timor. Also in 1995, Erdut agreement regarding the peaceful resolution of the Croatian War of Independence is reached. In 1996, a Saudi Arabian Airlines Boeing 747 and a Kazakh Ilyushin 2-76 cargo plane collide in midair near New Delhi. 349 people are killed in a deadly midair collision to date. 1997, Ramzi Youssef is found guilty of masterminding in 1993 World Trade Center bombing. 1999, the 7.2 Dusi earthquake shakes northwestern Turkey with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 9, which is considered violent. At least 845 people are killed and almost 5,000 are injured. 2001, in New York City, American Airlines Flight 587 and Airbus A300 en route to the Dominican Republic crashes minutes after takeoff from JFK Airport, killing all 260 on board and 5 people on the ground. You know you're having a bad day when you get hit by a falling airplane. 2001, the war in Afghanistan. Taliban forces abandon Kabul ahead of advancing Afghan Northern Alliance troops. Of course, that wouldn't happen today. They'd just yell boo and the Northern Alliance would run. 2003, Iraq War. In Syria, Iraq, at least 23 people among the first Italian casualties of the 2003 invasion of Iraq are killed by a suicide bomb attack on an Italian police base. 2003, Shanghai Trans Rapid sets a new world speed record of 311 miles per hour for commercial railway systems. That remains the fastest run modified commercial rail vehicles. 2011, Silvio Berlusconi tenders his resignation as Prime Minister of Italy. Becomes effective November 16th. It was done due in large part to the European sovereign debt crisis. 2011, a blast in Iran's Shahid Madaris missile base leads to the death of 17 of the Revolutionary Guard members, including Hassan Tehrani Mogadam, a key figure in Iran's missile program. 2014, the Philae lander, deployed from the European Space Agency's Rosetta probe, reaches the surface of the comet 67P, In 2015, two suicide bombers detonated explosives in Burj El Baharani, Beirut, killed 43 and injured over 200 others. In 2017, the 7.3 Kermanshah earthquake shakes the northern Iran-Iraq border with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 8, which is considered severe. At least 410 are killed and over 7,000 are injured. Now, there's a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Birth of Sun Yat-sen. Also Doctor's Day and Cultural Renaissance Day in the Republic of China. Christian Feast Day. Arsatius. Asterisk of Panahama. Kumini Fota. Cunibert. Emilian of Cocoglia. Emerius of Myrtle. Josephat. Kuntsevich in the Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Catholic Church. Lavinius of Ghent, Macar, Margarito Flores Garcia, Nilus of Sinai, Patens, René de Angers, Theodore the Studite, Yamar, Constitution Day in Azerbaijan, Father's Day in Indonesia, National Health Day in Indonesia, National Youth Day in East Timor, and it's World Pneumonia Day. We have to celebrate pneumonia, don't you know? Let's see what else we got on this date. In 295, we have the origin of Era of Ascension. 764, Tibetan troops occupied Chang'an for 15 days. That's the capital of the Chinese Tang Dynasty. 954, as I said, Lotharios, who was 13 at the time, becomes king of France. 1555, the English Parliament reestablishes Catholicism. 1591, the Castilians' army occupies Zaragoza. 1661, Robert Hooke, a scientist, is appointed curator of experiments to the Royal Society in England. 1673, Dutch troops under Wilhelm III occupy Bonn. 1682, the Swedish king, Charles XI, establishes an absolute monarchy. He the king. 1723, Ambrose Godfrey patents a gunpowder fuel fire extinguisher system in England. 1775, for some God knows why reason, George Washington forbid recruiting officers from enlisting black troops. 1793, the first... Mayor of Paris and astronomer Jean-Sylvain Bailly are guillotined during the Reign of Terror. Excuse me. 1799, Andrew Ellicott makes the first known record of a meteor shower observation in the U.S. He was on a ship off the coast of the Florida Keys. 1813, Allied troops occupy Zwolle in the Netherlands. 1823, the Great North Holland Canal in Amsterdam opens. 1847, Sir James Young Simpson, a British physician, is the first to use chloroform as an anesthetic. 1859, Jules Leotard performs the first flying trapeze circus act in Paris. He also designed the garment he wore, and it bears his name to this day, the leotard. 1880, best-selling American novel Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ by Lew Wallace, who was a soldier, is published. He also went on to become the territorial governor of the New Mexico Territory. 1885, Montreal and Batrania football clubs defeat Ontario combined team 3-0 in the championship game. 1890, Mabel Loomis Todd publishes the first edition of poems by Emily Dickinson. 1894, Lawrence Hargrave, Australian aeronautical pioneer and inventor of the box kite, linked four huge box kites together and flew, even though he was still attached to the ground by piano wire. 1899, British troops reached Durban in Natal. In 1900, the World's Fair, called the Exposition Universelle in Paris, closes after 50 million visitors. 1910, the first possible movie stunt. Man jumped into the Hudson River from a burning balloon. 1914, the Turk Sultan Jamal Pasha declares a German holy war. 1915, the Theodore William Richards is the first American to win a Nobel Prize in chemistry. And finally, and something I'm sure was exciting to hear, in 1920 on this date, Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis was elected the first baseball commissioner. He was also a judge. Well, on that note, we're going to end our little history segment. And we've been talking about the moon and the NASA program and in 2018, I wrote a book called Is Somebody on the Moon? Now, even though a lot of people seem to still doubt it, there's not much question that astronauts from the U.S. landed on the moon. It was the NASA mission known as Apollo 11, the fifth manned mission in that program. And it was mission commander Neil Armstrong and pilot Buzz Aldrin who were the first known humans to walk on the moon. If you notice, I said the first known humans. And though it's not often mentioned, while Armstrong and Aldrin enjoyed their lunar stroll, Michael Collins remained in the command capsule in orbit around the moon. The lunar module that went down to the surface was known as the Eagle. Now, there's a lot of political concern surrounding the race to be the first country to successfully land men on the moon and get them home safely. U.S. and Soviet Union, firm allies during World War II, had become adversaries and were stockpiling weapons for what many believed would be a very violent World War III. Of course, once both sides had the hydrogen bomb, there was little chance there'd be a lasting peace on the planet. And both sides seemed to be intent on proving who had the best and strongest military. And that led to a lot of face-offs. And to make matters worse, a number of little-known scientific principles are being thoroughly investigated in the wake of the scientific marvels discovered by victorious troops from both sides in the captured research facilities of the Third Reich and as offshoots of the research that led to the American atomic bomb. It seemed only natural that the formerly military research should be turned to the question of whether or not mankind could leave this planet and colonize the stars. This is a belief that whoever controlled the planet could control space. It was also true that whoever controlled space controlled the planet. In fact, in the 60s, an unbelievable amount of resources of both the U.S. and the Soviet Union, the world's two major superpowers, were committed to what became known as the space race. question seemed to be, would the East or the West control the solar system? Pragmatically and politically, it seemed to many this was a better use of these resources than the ever-present arms race. But perhaps there was a most important reason for the space race than mere competitiveness. Now, in July of 1947, the much-discussed crash of an unidentified flying object took place near Roswell, New Mexico. Now, the question of whether or not there were space aliens in the solar system or maybe on the planet became one of concern to both governments. And this gave rise to numerous conspiracy theories and discoveries of crashed UFOs by both military as well as non-military personnel that were hastily hidden by the governments on both sides of the world for fear of the public panicking on a large scale. Now, research has shown there have been a number of contacts between the occupants of UFOs and the humans, and as well as crashes of said craft on the Earth. Clearly, contact between the occupants of the UFOs and humans could easily become a matter of national security. Hence, a program of suppressing all such reports became a major priority. It's also fascinating to find that at the very same time our government told us there were no aliens and that every UFO sighting was either a hoax, a misidentification of some common item, or just an outright lie or figment of the imagination of the witness, there was in existence of federal lawmaking contact with said imaginary occupants of these non-existent UFOs a federal crime. So the question became, what do we expect to find on the moon? Now, since the time of the Roswell crash in 1947, the government's gone to great lengths to deny even the possibility that there are UFOs or aliens visiting the Earth. So I guess I have to ask about the federal law that was actually passed in 1969. Now, it takes a great deal in the way of time and money to pass a federal law, and not to mention the necessity of creating a mechanism to enforce said law. So why was it that at the same time numerous federal agencies were screaming to the heavens there were no UFOs or aliens or anything else strange, would the federal government go to the trouble of creating and passing a federal law making contact with said non-existent entities a federal crime? This simply defies logic. Now, from its terms, anyone found guilty of such illegal contact with the imaginary UFOs or non-existent aliens would face imprisonment for up to 1 year, well, as a fine of $5,000. Such exposure would also result in being quarantined under armed guard by the NASA administrator without a hearing of any type. It did away with habeas corpus. Now, clearly, the law was passed to protect the Earth from the possible biological contamination resulting from the U.S. Apollo space program and other space exploration programs. And clearly, the U.S. government was concerned that contact with extraterrestrial bacteria could result in a worldwide plague. Now, this law was Title 14, Section 1211 of the U.S. Federal Code, and it's entitled Forbidding Contact with Extraterrestrials. Part 1211 is Extraterrestrial Exposure. 1211.100 is entitled Scope. And it says this part establishes A, NASA policy, responsibility, and authority to guard the Earth against any harmful contamination or adverse changes in its environment resulting from personnel, spacecraft, or other property returning to the Earth after landing on or becoming within the atmosphere envelope of a celestial body, and B, security requirements, restrictions, and safeguards that are necessary in the interest of national security. Now, in Section 1211.101, it's applicability. Provisions of this part to all NASA manned and unmanned space missions which land or come within the atmospheric envelope of a celestial body and return to the Earth. In Section 0.102 is definitions. Under A, NASA and the administrator means respectively the National Aeronautic and Space Administration and the administrator of the National Aeronautic and Space Administration or his authorized representative. B, extraterrestrially exposed means the state or condition of any person, property, animal, or other form of life or matter, whatever, whoever, which has, one, touched directly or come within the atmospheric envelope of any other or any other celestial body, or, two, touched directly or been in close proximity or have been exposed indirectly to by a person, property, animal, other form of life or matter, who or which have been extraterrestrially exposed by virtue of paragraph B1. In other words, you could still violate the law if you came in contact with somebody who was violating the law himself. For example, if a person or thing A touches the surface of the moon and on A's return to Earth, B touches A and subsequently C touches B, all these, A through C inclusive, would be extraterrestrially exposed. A and B directly, and C would be indirectly. Now, quarantine is defined as the detention, examination, and decontamination of any person, property, animal, or other form of life or matter, whatever, that is extraterrestrially exposed, and includes the apprehension or seizure of such person, property, animal, or other form of life or matter, whatever. D, quarantine period means a period of consecutive calendar days as may be established in accordance with 1211.104A. Now, 1211.104.A is administrative actions. The administrator, his designee, shall in his discretion, one, determine the beginning and duration of a quarantine period. With respect to any space mission, the quarantine period as it applies to various life forms will be announced. They didn't even know what the quarantine period was going to be at the beginning. Two, designate in writing quarantine officers to exercise quarantine authority. Three, determine that a particular person, property, animal, or the form of life, or matter, whatever, is extraterrestrially exposed and quarantine such person, property, animal, other form of life, or matter, whatever. Four, determine within the U.S. or within vessels or vehicles of the United States the places, boundaries, and rules of operation of necessary quarantine stations. Five, provide for guard services by contract or otherwise as may be necessary to maintain security on those quarantined. Six, provide for the sustenance, health, and welfare of the people quarantined under the provisions of this law. Seven, hold such hearings at such times and such manner for such purposes as may be desirable and necessary under this law. And B, three, during any period of announced quarantine, no person shall enter or depart from the limits of the quarantine station without permission of the cognizant officer. Then you got B4, any person who enters the limits of any quarantine station during the quarantine period shall be deemed to have consented to be quarantined themselves. Then B5, at the earliest practical time, each person who's quarantined by NASA shall be given a reasonable opportunity to communicate by telephone with legal counsel. Then under Section 108, we have violations. Whoever willfully violates, attempts to violate, conspires to violate any provision of this part or this regulation or other order issued under this part, or enters or departs from the limits of a quarantine station in disregard of the quarantine rules, shall be fined not more than $5,000 or imprisoned for not more than a year. But you don't get a trial. Now, this law was enacted July 16, 1969, shortly before a moon landing, which took place in July of 1969. Now, as I pointed out in the first book I ever wrote, The Occult Connection, UFOs, Secret Societies, and Ancient Gods, by the terms of this law, anybody who simply comes in contact with either a space alien or a UFO is automatically designated a wanted felon. He or she doesn't get a trial or a hearing of any kind. And this certainly tends to support the premise that the government knew that it was possible to come in contact with a UFO or an alien. Otherwise, why pass this relatively bizarre law? Now, you might believe it would take a hearing to prove whether or not the offender actually came in contact with the UFO or the alien. But according to the terms of the law, if the NASA administrator said that he or she believed the offender came in contact with the UFO or the alien, then as a matter of law, the accused had in fact come in contact with these proscribed UFOs or aliens, and immediate incarceration was automatic. The right of habeas corpus was specifically denied under the terms of this law in direct contravention to the rights and privileges guaranteed to U.S. citizens under the Constitution. Now, you might believe under the provisions of Section 1211.101 applicability that the law applied only to NASA manned and unmanned space missions, but according to George Andrews, in his book Extraterrestrials Among Us, the question about the applicability of the law was put to NASA's general counsel, S. Neil Hosenball. According to Mr. Hosenball, the law is most definitely applicable to space vehicles and extraterrestrial personnel that didn't originate on the Earth. And that's not strange enough. The law was rescinded on Friday, April 26, 1991, by the administrator of NASA, Richard Truly, since, according to him, the law has served its purpose, is no longer in keeping with current policy. Well, this would tend to make me wonder, what was the law's purpose and what is the current policy? We seem to have a bit of a dichotomy here. And so it was that in mid-1969, the U.S. government passed a law, as I just gone over, making it a crime to come in contact with a UFO or an alien. Of course, at the same time, the same government was stating firmly there were no UFOs or aliens. Now, while I was stationed in the Panama Canal Zone in the 1970s, I was aware of a number of sightings that were reported by soldiers within the 193rd Infantry Brigade. In each case, field grade officers threatened to reporter with severe penalties if they spoke of what they had seen to anybody else. In fact, I even got in a gunfight with one. And when I reported it back, I was accused of drinking. We fired 2,500 rounds at this UFO. Didn't phase it in the least. And when push came to shove, the colonel told me to just put it down to a miscount. The rounds were expended in training. Now, there were some who were of the strong belief that there was a base for these crafts somewhere in the jungle south of the Panama Canal Zone. But we were forbidden to enter that area. And as I became friends with some of the Panamanians that worked on post, I heard stories of strange things seen in the jungle and of certain areas that even the locals refused to enter. But when I tried to enter these areas with my unit during individual training, I was prohibited to the point of being threatened with court-martial. So what do, or did, we have to fear from exploring the question of whether or not there were UFOs or aliens? Well, to try to get an answer to this question, we need to go back to what has become known as the Roswell incident. And for those that are not familiar with this matter, it's alleged that in July of 1947, a UFO crashed outside of Roswell, New Mexico. There have been quite a number of books published that explored this matter in detail. Of course, to be perfectly truthful, the crash was actually closer to the small community of Corona, New Mexico, than it was Roswell. But when word of this matter reached the closest military post, the Roswell Army Airfield in Roswell, New Mexico, it became known as the Roswell Incident. Now, stationed at Roswell Army Airfield at this time was the 509th Bomber Group, which was one of the few units trained to use nuclear weapons. Once receiving the report from the sheriff, the commander of the 509th, Colonel William Blanchard, dispatched his G2 intelligence officer, Major Jesse Marcel, to go investigate the report. According to Major Marcel, he found a debris field that stretched for some distance. And according to reports, he filled the back of a military sedan with as many pieces of this material, which his son, Jesse Marcel Jr., who I came to know, later talked about. Major Marcel was firm in his belief the debris was not from an earthly craft. Now, incidentally, the 509th ordered that the Roswell Army Airfield Public Information Officer, Lieutenant Walter Haupt, to issue a formal press release, the Army had captured a flying saucer. Now, that press release was later rescinded on orders of higher headquarters.
In fact, General Roger Ramey went to great lengths to discredit the findings of the 509th to the point of faking several photos showing that what the 509th identified as a flying saucer was actually a weather bureau. So you have to ask yourself, why would Ramey want to discredit one of the most technically proficient units in the Army? What was the concern about the release of the fact they'd found a crashed UFO? Now, as intended, the Roswell story died out as the military did everything in its power to discredit the report and the witnesses. This also included counterintelligence group and military police officers threatening those who did or may have seen something they shouldn't have. The uncle of a friend of my wife's, who was a young boy at the time, had come up from Mexico, and he was, Mac Brazil was the rancher who found the material. And this young man acted as a gopher for Mac Brazil. But after the CIG officers got through threatening him, he went back to Mexico and said he's never coming back. Some witnesses, besides that young man, were also threatened. Unfortunately for the military, refusing to admit they existed didn't stop the UFOs from flying or the occupants of said craft from wandering around the countryside. Periodic stories became an avalanche after the Soviet Union's successful launch of Sputnik 1 in October 1957. In fact, from a classified FBI report dated November 12, 1957, and released under the Freedom of Information Act, it's reported that for the prior 2 weeks there had been numerous reports of UFO sightings as well as reports of aliens and human contact. All the while ridiculing the very idea of UFOs or aliens, the highest levels of our government were very concerned about the discovery there were others in the universe besides ourselves and what this discovery would do to society as a whole. It may have been with this ominous issue in mind that the National Aeronautics and Space Administration was created on July 29, 1958. It was supposed to be an independent agency of the executive branch of the federal government. And even though it's called the Civilian Space Agency, if you read its charter, which I have done, it makes it very clear that it's part of the Department of Defense. Now, in the early 1960s, Donald Michael of the Brookings Institution prepared a study on behalf of NASA's Committee on Long-Range Studies that was entitled Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs. And the question proposed by this study is very simple. What would be the reaction of society if it were found that there were really aliens? Now, the big issue that surfaced on page 183 of this report referenced the fact that anthropological field filed contained many examples of societies sure of their place in the universe that have disintegrated when they've had to associate with previously unfamiliar societies espousing different ideas and different life ways. Others that have survived such an experience did so by paying the price of changes in values and attitudes and behavior. In other words, the very knowledge that there was advanced creatures out there could have a devastating effect on our society in general. So for this very reason, as a minimum, the government seemed to have begun a very complete and thorough program to suppress the evidence of alien visitation. But the problem was that there's been evidence of these others available to anybody who reads for hundreds of years. Certainly on the assumption that these creatures exist, it has to be asked, where did they come from? Clearly, whether these craft or entities come from their home civilizations, from bases here nearby, the location of these bases is a question of major importance. But with all that being said, there's one location that stands out as a perfect location from which to observe this planet. That location? The moon, of course. Now, we've been assured from our space flights and two landings there's nobody on the moon. But that's like landing on the outskirts of New York City in the middle of the night. You don't see anybody, and you report back it as a totally uninhabited area. Surprisingly enough, there's a great deal of evidence that NASA's not telling the truth about what's on the moon. We're going to talk about that in a little bit more detail. Now, it's no secret the U.S. government's adamant that every UFO reported is a case of mistaken identity or a hoax. In fact, generally, if the sighting can't be dismissed, the witnesses are attacked publicly as either having a mental problem or seeking publicity. But do all highly placed individuals, either in or affiliated with government, have the same belief? That's a very important question. The 2016 presidential election saw the release of thousands of emails of various individuals and organizations by a group called WikiLeaks. It's run by a man by the name of Julian Assange. He was eventually had his life ruined by unsupported allegations that he had had sex by surprise with some women in Sweden. His organization hacked the email service of hundreds and released the information to the public. These emails cover numerous topics that were given major media coverage. Cover one area that was discussed in those emails that was virtually ignored by the media were unidentified flying objects. See, the media wants to tell you what to think. And they want to tell you there's no such thing as a UFO. In keeping with what seemed to be U.S. government policy, when emails released on this topic were WikiLeaks couldn't be refuted, a considered effort was made to target Julian Assange himself. He was accused of having committed rape in Sweden, and this fact was trumpeted from the rooftops by the media in the U.S. Of course, it was later determined he wasn't charged with rape, but with something called sex by surprise or unexpected sex. Basically, the cause of these charges stemmed from his failure to have used a condom. A far cry from rape. According to James Catlin, a lawyer who'd represented Assange, one of the accusers appeared to have been tied to U.S. financial anti-Castro and anti-communist groups. In other words, she had ties to the military, the intelligence community, and she was being used to gut, and the intelligence community was busting a gut to suppress the release of the WikiLeaks emails. My goodness, surprise, surprise, surprise. The true revelation regarding UFOs headlined in these emails is the fact that UFOs have been and are still being seriously discussed in highly classified documents. The email showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that at the same time our government's assuring us UFOs are figments of our collective imaginations, they're discussing these figments in these highly classified messages. Now, who are the people that were sending these messages? Well, the first on my list is William Jefferson Bill Clinton, my cousin. In April of 2014, Bill Clinton appeared on the nighttime talk show, Jimmy Kimmel Live. And during the interview, Kimmel said, "I probably wouldn't finish the oath. I'd run to the White House. I'd demand to see all the classified files on UFOs because I want to know what's been going on. Did you do that?" And Clinton said, "Sorta." He went on to explain he had looked into the alleged crash of a UFO in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947 and into the legends about alien craft being hidden in Area 51. He said in both cases he found nothing of interest. He also made mention of the possibility that there might be career bureaucrats keeping secrets even from the president. And I would also point out that Bill Clinton's veracity is not exactly top drawer. He admitted to lying about his encounters with Monica Lewinsky. Then we've got Hillary, "Why don't you recognize my greatness," Clinton. Two-time presidential candidate, former first lady and purported co-president with her husband William Jefferson Clinton, wanted very much to discuss UFOs on Jimmy Kimmel during her campaign against President Trump. During an interview with reporter Damon Steer of the Conway Daily Sun, she was asked about her husband's comments regarding UFOs. Her response was interesting. She said, "I think we may have been visited already. We just don't know for sure." She said her campaign chairman, John Podesta, encouraged her to pursue the subject and noted that he made her a personal pledge going to get that information out. What information was that? Then we have John Podesta himself. He's not just some guy in Washington, D.C., but he's a man who served at the highest levels of our elected government. Not only was a former counselor to President Barack, the Emperor Obama, the White House Chief of Staff for the Clinton administration, he was a major player in the campaign of Hillary Clinton. Now, he's long discussed his interest in the question of UFOs and aliens. In a press conference in 2002, he publicly called for the release of secret UFO government files. He also said it's time for the government to declassify records that are more than 25 years old and to provide scientists with data that will assist in determining the real nature of that phenomenon. Are they real machines, or are they living creatures of some sort, or just figments of our collective imaginations? Then we've got Tom DeLonge, guitarist for the power punk trio known as Blink 182. That was an American rock band formed in Poway, California. It also seems he's got very serious interest in UFOs. In an email from October 2016, he wrote to John Podesta that he'd been working with a former military official. And he said this military official wanted to get the word out that he was in charge of all that stuff. When Roswell crashed, they shipped it to the laboratory at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. General McCaslin was in charge of that exact laboratory up until a couple of years ago. Now, further email exchanges reveal that Tom DeLonge is also being advised by 10 high-level insiders who want to reveal the truth behind a secret space program being run out of Area 51. Of the 10, one, of course, is Major General William McCaslin. Another is Rob Weiss, head of Lockheed's Martin Skunk Works. A third is another United States Air Force Major General named Michael Carey. Then we got Edgar Mitchell. He's a United States Naval officer, an aviator, a test pilot, aeronautical engineer, also a NASA astronaut, and a firm believer in UFOs. He's also a member of the crew of Apollo 14, the pilot of the Apollo 14 lunar lander and the sixth man to walk on the moon. He's a firm believer in the existence of UFOs, aliens, and the Roswell crash. In 2014, Dr. Mitchell's representative, Terry Mansfield, sent an email asking John Podesta for a meeting to discuss how zero-point energy from aliens could save the planet from global warming. Email went on to say, "We work with specific extraterrestrial intelligence from a contiguous universe." Well, prior to his death, Dr. Mitchell gave many interviews where he confirmed his belief in the reality of UFOs and aliens. Then we got the National Security Agency, or the famed NSA. There was a discussion in NSA Technical Journal Volume 11 by Mr. Lambros D. Calamajos regarding certain aspects of extraterrestrial intelligence. Dr. Howard Campaign wrote an article for the NASA Technical Journal discussing a series of radio messages that had been heard coming from space. Some believe that one of NSA's original missions was to try and eavesdrop on alien communication. Remember, the NSA was created in 1947, shortly after the crash at Roswell. And in government, there are no coincidences. Then we got NASA. It's long held out the belief that the moon is just a cold, airless, lifeless rock and is not inhabited and has never been inhabited. Of course, if this is the case, why is NASA shown such interest in what takes place on the moon? Remember, we actually dropped a nuclear device on the moon at one point, allegedly looking for water. And of course, there's the secret back channels used by the astronauts to report things that they don't want the public to know about. There have been many reports heard of astronauts citing many strange things in space that have been cut off in mid-word as the conversation switches to these secret back channels. Allegedly, astronaut Scott Carpenter said at no time when the astronauts were in space were they alone. They were under constant surveillance by UFOs. Now, in keeping with that, let's look at some communications said to have come from NASA. During the 1969 moon landings, the entire event was televised for the world to see, and all radio communication between the astronauts on the moon and the Earth were clearly heard by the avid listeners on Earth. Or rather, that's what NASA said and wants us to think. If you recall, the first two men to walk on the moon were Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. Well, there's a conversation between Armstrong, Aldrin, and the mission control that was released by Christopher Kraft, director of NASA Mission Control in Houston during the Apollo moon missions after he retired. The astronaut said, "These are giant things. And this is not an optical illusion. Mission Control's response, what? What the hell's happening? What's wrong with you? Astronauts, they're here, under the surface. Mission Control, what's there? Emissions interrupted. Interference Control calling 11. Astronauts, we saw some visitors. They were there for a while observing the instruments. Mission Control, repeat your last information. Astronauts, I say that there were other spaceships. They're lined up on the other side of the crater. Mission Control, repeat that. Now, Christopher Kraft, who released this information, was on duty during the Apollo 11 mission to the moon. Astronauts, let us sound this orbit. In 625 to 5, automatic relay connected. My hands are shaking so bad they can't do anything. Film it. Got it. Those damn cameras have picked up anything. What then? Mission Control, have you picked up anything? Astronauts, I don't have any film at hand. Three shots of the saucers or whatever they were that were ruining the film. Mission Control. Control here. Are you on your way? Is the uproar with the UFOs over? Astronauts. They've landed here. There they are. And they're watching us. Mission Control. The mirrors. The mirrors. Have you set them up? Astronauts. Yes, they're in the right place, but whatever made those spaceships surely can come tomorrow and remove them. Over and out. Well, NASA made no secret of the fact that the missions, both manned as well as unmanned, have taken literally tens of thousands of photos, paid for by taxpayer dollars. But NASA archives them and doesn't discuss them. What's not openly discussed is that there's an entire building dedicated to airbrushing these photos before they're released to the public, if they ever are released. So what's that about the moon our leaders don't want us to know? Well, in our next show, we're going to look at some facts about the moon that may not be common knowledge. When I first started my show, years and years and years ago, because I've been on the air over 30 years, I was doing a magazine called Adventure Magazine. It was one of those grocery store handout deals. And I had a listener to the show come to my office and he said, here's some money and here's a picture number. Contact NASA and ask for this photo. I said, what am I going to see? And he said, wait till you get it. Well, what I got was a photo of a track vehicle running across the surface of the moon. We checked the date. There was no manned mission anywhere around that date. So who was running that track vehicle across the surface of the moon? I asked NASA. They refused to respond. So you have to ask yourself. Remember Project Horizon, where the military was going to put a permanent base on the moon back in the 60s? Maybe they have. Well, we run out of time, but we're going to talk more about that. In our next show. So until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.